Welcome back to Voices from the Frontlines on KPFK 90.7 FM, 98.7 FM in Los Angeles. We are now being joined by Greg Achille on the phone. Greg, how are you doing?
All right. How are you?
Good. Achille is a senior political and community organizer for SEIU Local 1000, and he's also a member of the executive committee of Community Call to Action and Accountability. So, Achille, let's start off with the most recent shooting that just happened of Elio Carrion, who was actually an Air Force police officer. A lot of people might have seen this on the news a couple weeks ago, where you have the man who's on the ground, hands up, the officer says, you know, get up, get up. He gets up, and then he shoots him three times. One of the things my grandma used to tell me was, anytime, Damon, you stop by a cop, do exactly what they say. Get their badge number, but do exactly what they say. So in this case, when he actually did what he said, he was shot. So what's your response? What are you talking to the community members about?
Well, we made a statement at the first annual commemoration of the death of Devin Brown, which helped spark the Community Call to Action and Accountability, its creation. We issued a statement saying that it was tragic and uncalled for, and that we are asking that a full and complete investigation, be launched right away, and that the officer responsible is held accountable. I mean, it's the same kind of thing that we asked for Stephen Garcia. At least it looked like an egregious act from the general standpoint of most eyewitnesses or most people who would see that. And one of the things that has got to happen is, you know, there's been this pattern, and we've seen it now for a number of years. I mean, you can go back to Eula Love, Margaret Mitchell, Amadou Diallo, Susie Pena, Devin Brown. I can click them off. There seems to be this pattern that, and the message is, you can shoot and kill Latinos and African Americans. And this reinforces that kind of thing, even though Officer Webb was a long time, been on the force for a long time, an African American, da 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 da. There seems to be this position that you can shoot us. You can shoot us with impunity. You can shoot us first. And then, you know, usually it's justified. And there is this pattern, and it only happens with us. So, I mean, you got to ask yourself the question, is it in our DNA? Is it in the water? Or is it some kind of institutional position that law enforcement has that, in our case, in the case of African Americans and Latinos, we can be shot? And what I saw and what many of us saw happen out in San Bernardino is, I think, an example of that. I don't think in the minds of most Americans, most Californians, most San Bernardinos, that had that the young man been white, that would have happened.
Well, it's interesting because if you just think about now and then, we just were talking about the Chicano walkouts. And so if you think back then, who were the police officers? Who was, you know, where you guys went, where we've been going to in terms of police commission is Parker Center. Chief Parker was the white, super racist, you know, sick the hounds on black and Latino and people of color. What I think is really interesting about this is if you look who killed Elio, or not killed, who shot Elio, it was a Latino officer. And if you look who shot Devin Brown and killed Devin Brown, it was a, wait, no, got that wrong. So black officer killed shot a Latino.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
So I think one of the interesting things of this, if you even talk about the context of what's happening in the jails right now, a lot of the kind of power structure and the people who are putting the policies out are being shielded, and it's more like black fighting Latino and vice versa. So what are some of the things that you have been trying to do in terms of that to less muddy the water and try to expose it for what it actually is?
Well, I mean, the first thing is you got to attack the institution that allows these kinds of, that either allows these things to happen or promotes them to happen. Because if you just lay it on the person, then the institution gets off the hook. While we have to say that the person, be they African American or Latino, their acts were wrong, what allows that to happen on a consistent basis, with us, regularly? And that's where the institution comes in. So first you have to say to the person's behavior is wrong and unacceptable. And then you have to say the institution that allows this, that promotes this, or condones it in a number of ways has to be attacked, and policies and positions have to be changed. I mean, and that's one of the things that the Community Called Action and Accountability has focused on. We have a dual purpose. One is to stop police abuse against residents and citizens of L.A. The second is to stop the violence in our community, black-on-black violence, black-on-brown and brown-on-brown violence. So those are the twofold purposes that we have. But when it's an institution, unless you change the policy position within the institution, and in some cases change the personnel, you continue to get the same outcomes.
So that's the kind of the thing. I guess let's go to LeDevon Brown in particular right now. So I know Community Call, I've been to a lot of the meetings. Community Call Action has been meeting since February 6th was when Devon Brown got shot.
We've been meeting 52 weeks every Tuesday at 7 p.m.
That's right. That's at Bethel,
Bethel AME
Church, 79th and West. So last week, the L.A. Police Commission voted 4-1 to just basically say that Stephen Garcia, who shot Devon Brown, was not acting within police policy, et cetera. And now it's going to go to basically discipline hearings by the chief of police, William Braddon, who I believe from the beginning was saying that he thought that he was in policy. Is that correct?
Yes. And where it goes now is to a board of rights, which is two officers, two high-ranking officers, and a civilian. So we can almost predict what the outcome will be.
Well, Kelly, what are your demands against Chief Braddon?
Well, we think that while he may have brought a certain spirit here, that maybe he's outlived his usefulness. But what the community called action and accountability, our next steps is that we're going to the state attorney general and the U.S. attorney to ask them to file a civil rights violations against Garcia and the LAPD, because this is in line with what they were supposed to be dealing with the consent decree.
Mm-hmm.
And for many of us, who could not get justice at the local level, we wound up having to go to the federal level to get civil rights violations charges. I mean, this is very much akin to what happens in the South during the civil rights era. You couldn't get all white juries to convict whites who blatantly killed black folks down there. It's the same kind of thing out here. There has been the pattern has been: you shoot us, it's in policy, and that's about it. This is the first time in a long time where a group of people said, well, you know what, it doesn't appear like this is in policy. It doesn't appear like this is that we're prepared to extend to the police officer the benefit of the doubt, and that this does not appear to be right. And for the first time that happened, and so we're pleased at that, but it's a partial victory, partial settlement on from our vantage point, because the person who did it, Garcia, you know, has still not been held accountable. I mean, for us, this is our Emmett Till. This is L.A.'s Emmett Till. This child was 13 years old. He stole a car. And while joyriding is wrong, it should not cost you your life. And it appears like this officer was not threatened. This, you know, it certainly all of the evidence after one of the most extensive investigations in LAPD history is that, in fact, he shot from the side, that the car was moving 2 miles an hour. That's like, you know, a ball rolling downhill.
Mm-hmm.
And he shot. Now, the only reason he would do that, in our estimation, is that there's a young black person behind the wheel, and in America and in L.A., you can shoot a young black person.
That's right.
And it's okay. You can shoot 10 times into the car, and 7 of those bullets hit this child and kill him. And that is okay. I mean, had there not been an outcry from, you know, that created the CCAA and the rest, this case would be, we wouldn't even be talking about it today.
That's right.
Look, I mean, the fact that Susie Pena was killed, I mean, open fire, all the rest, and they want to try to blame the child's father. When many of us in our heart and gut know that had that been a white person, they would have negotiated. They would have been patient. mean, we have this feeling, and we issued it in our statement, that when it comes to rights, the police force, law enforcement overall, is much more humane, much more patient, and much more professional. When it comes to Latinos and African Americans, it's you shoot, and then you have an investigation, and then it's within policy, and it's okay. I mean, even in the Amadou Diallo case, where here's a young African immigrant who was reaching for his wallet to prove, you know, so he was, and the police open fire, shoot the man 21 times, the police get off. They get off because, you know, they went upstate, first of all, upstate New York, brought people together, and the defense was, well, this is a dangerous area, so you could understand how they could open fire like that. Okay. And the same thing with Rodney King. You know, the police officer got off. They went to Simi Valley. You know, black man don't stop. Well, what are you going to do? Well, you beat him. That's what you do. I mean, that's the message. That's the underlying position that guides much of the policy that law enforcement in Southern California and really nationally exhibit. Now, one of the things we are glad to see happen, we're glad that we contributed to making happen, was at least the policy has been changed about shooting into cars. As you know, if you feel threatened, get out the way, as opposed to open. You know,
One of the things that I'm really glad that you keep on hammering on, and so all our listeners can hear that, you know, clearly it's structural racism is still here today. And I think one of the things we're talking about is if you have a system that is not equal, it is not fair in terms of how you treat different people from different groups, whether it's around documentation, whether it's around whatever, to have more cops is not going to settle the problem. So one of the things that happened, I guess it was a year and a half ago, they had Measure A, which was a county half-cent sales tax that was voted down during the presidential election, that was trying to get, I think it was 1,400 more cops, open two jails, county jails, et cetera, et cetera. And this was during the whole election of Antonio against Han and whatnot, and Han was really pushing for this half-cent sales tax. So one of the things that I did, our group at the Labor Community Strategy Center went to the city council and spoke against this. And during public comment, one of the questions I put toward the city council was like, you know, the question was, how much is a black life worth today? And I said, you know, based on Kelly's Blue Book value, it's worth about $1,900, because that's what it cost for the 1990 Camry that Devin Brown was driving. And then I fully said, I was like, well, why are we going to pay to have more taxes so we can have 1,400 more cops, which is going to have 1,400 more flashlights to beat us with, right? So I think that it's really important how you keep on saying it's a structural problem. Have you guys talked about, you know, because actually the current mayor is talking about getting more money for more cops. Parenthetically, over the last 3 years, the sheriff's budget has gone up by about 38%. LAPD's budget has gone up about 25%, not by sales taxes, by moving stuff away from healthcare programs, social safety, social welfare programs, et cetera. But I guess to get back to the point, what have you thought about in terms of fighting the expansion of jails, fighting the expansion of more cops on the streets?
Well, I mean, that's been a constant center of discussion. But we find ourselves in this dual role. On the one hand, many residents where we live and work want to see better, more professional, more humane policing, because they live in areas that are problems, that have some very serious problems, and they want those problems dealt with. On the other hand, what they don't want is this kind of shoot 'em up cops who come out with the notion that if you're black, I can shoot you because you're obviously a gang member. And so we find ourselves in this duality, because many of the people we deal with live in the communities in and around Bethel AME, and there are some serious problems. So there is this belief, on one hand, that having more professional, humane police is not a bad thing, but to have more of the kind of police with the attitude that you can shoot us because if you're young and black, you're in a gang, period. Right. And so you can be shot, and that's okay. That is the kind of institutional and structural conditions we got to change, so that the people who wind up, if we're going to have more police, and we are, I mean, you know, you hear the statement about L.A. has the smallest number of police of any metropolitan city. And it's the kind of thing, the kind of drumbeat you make in order to, you know, to raise money, to get money for more police.
Well, I mean, that's just like the thing around the whole jails thing right now. It's saying blacks and Latinos are fighting. And, I mean, I can see what's coming next. That's why we need more money to reopen county jails, to expand the prison system, et cetera. I totally get that.
And the best and worst example of this psychology of punishment and lockup is the fact that more money has been spent on prisons in this state than on colleges.
That's right.
And that in many ways, prison guards are almost paid, if not more, certainly as much as college professors. I mean, and you can say, well, that's the emphasis of this society. And I think clearly from the 90s to the beginning of the 21st century, in the 2000s, this notion of lock 'em up, throw away the key was acceptable and promoted. Now we're finding out that just doing that is not going to be enough, that you're not going to be able to lock your way out of these problems. You're not going to be able to hire enough police out of this problem. You're going to have to create some real changes at the community levels to prevent people from going into gangs and prevent violence and the rest. So part of what we're looking at in our dual role is what can we do as residents and citizens in our communities to stop some of the violence. And that's why we have, you know, the mothers who, the victims, that have been going out and talking with people and trying to get our young people to choose another course. So I think that there's a number of other things we need to look at. But we can't always be stampeded into this, you know, more police, more jails, and we keep coming out with the same kind of outcomes. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over again without being willing to review it. And I think that's what we're doing. That's what we're learning. I think Bratton's going to do, and I looked at some poll numbers recently. I mean, outside of Antonio, he's the second most popular person in L.A. City. Yeah, and so.
Well, Bush is also probably one of the most popular people in the world, but.
Bush is quite unpopular.
Right.
Even in his own town.
Yeah.
The only place that he may be very well liked is in Crawford, Texas. But his popularity has really fallen. Bratton's popularity, on the other hand, because I think Bratton is a combination.
Well, Kelly, we're going to have to go because we got to go out. But I just want to say, if folks want to go to Community Calls to Action meeting, it's 7 o'clock at 7900 Western at the corner of 79th Street. That's every Tuesday at 7 o'clock. We would like to thank all our guests today, Edward James Olmos, Moctezuma Esparza, Greg Akili. Today we have music from Ruben Blades, Victor Jara, Ishmael Rivera, and Bobby Mantos. Thank Alan Minsky, associate producer Lisa Adler, and engineer Maggie LaPeak. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Next week starting tomorrow, is a fun drive. Please give generously. Up next is Susie Weissman with Robert Fisk. See you in 2 weeks.